This episode of WDNF Today is being sponsored by MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. And you know, with the winter weather wearing down all of us and we're sitting at home, looking at Facebook, checking Twitter, reading our favorite guidebooks and thinking ourselves, and listening to our favorite podcast, of course. And you're thinking, man, you know where it's not cold and dreary? Disney World. You know where I really want to go? Disney World. And MEI and Mouse Travel is here to help you get a great trip planned and make it a reality. Because after all, getting down to Walt Disney World starts with booking a trip, and there's a lot going on, and you know what? Just a little something to look forward to is always a nice little thing, and MEI and Mouse Fan Travel have some great deals going on right now, in fact, so you want to check out their website at mousefantravel.com. Also, this episode is being sponsored by All-Star Vacation Homes, and when you're looking to go to Walt Disney World, you don't want to pay a lot, but you want a lot for it in terms of space, amenities, but you just are unwilling or can't afford to pay for a lot of expensive places. Well, All-Star Vacation Homes is the place for you. They've got so many great homes so close to Walt Disney World for a great price. Check them out right now at allstarvacationhomes.com. And when you make it down to Walt Disney World, you're also going to want to check out our other sponsor, touringplans.com. That's right. Touringplans.com allows you to see everything and do everything without waiting for everything. Boy, do I hate waiting in lines, but touringplans.com, it's my solution to get around those long lines so I can be the hero of my family. And we've got a special discount code just for our podcast listeners. That's right. If you use discount code ZUZU2015, ZUZU2015, you will get a great discount on a touringplans.com subscription. Check them out right now at touringplans.com.
Bringing the world to your world, this is Walt Disney World Today. Here are Mike Scopa, Len Testa, Mike Newell, and your host, Matt Hochberg.
It's Wednesday, January 21st, 2015, and this is episode 1444 of WDW Today. I'm Matt Hochberg of StudioCentral.com and RoyalCaribbeanBlog.com. Joining me on today's show is Mike Scopa, a senior feature writer he's just a blogger for TouringPlans.com, and he's also the co-host of the Mickey Miles podcast. Just a blogger. Boy, welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey. It seems like I've been away for a while, but I want to give a little shout-out to all the people who were kind enough to come up and say hi to me at Walt Disney World Marathon Weekend, and thank me and thank you guys for all the work we've done on the WW Today podcast and the Mickey Miles podcast. And I want to congratulate everybody who ran their first or their 21st marathon, half marathon, 10K, 5K, goofy or dopey. Thank you, everyone, and see you next year.
Superstar television. No?
Also joining us on today's show, Len Testa, co-author of The Official Guide to Walt Disney World, and he's also the host of the Disney Dish with Jim Hill podcast. Welcome to the show, Len.
Thanks, Matt. You know, when you were going through the social media that we checked, you missed Orkut and MySpace. I don't know what happened there.
It's my Friendster account got deleted.
That's downhill. Okay, all right.
Also joining us on today's show, Mike Newell, Mouse World Radio. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Woo, that's me. Get some cold cuts. Get some cold cuts. Get some cold cuts.
I laugh at that commercial every time.
Oh, baby, I want that car.
Nice. On today's show, we're having Magic Band Madness. That's right. We're covering the odd scenarios with Magic Bands that tend to perplex a lot of guests. And Len, the impetus for the show kind of came out of an unofficial guide research that you were doing, right?
Right. There's we always get questions about odd Magic Band scenarios, and so it's going to be a feature in the next edition of the unofficial guide, the 2016 version. But sort of test out the ideas, make sure we got all the bases covered. We thought we'd run through all the scenarios here on the show, and I think the way we should do it is I will ask the question and you guys attempt to answer it, and then through the magic of Mike Scabetta, who I talked to before the show,
calm down.
I'll give you what the answer actually is. I know, right? All right, so here's the thing, right? And Mike pretty much emphasized this. If you're going to Walt Disney World, you haven't been there before this year, the My Disney Experience website is going to take you through most of the or almost all the common scenarios. So it'll allow you to customize your Magic Bands. You can pick a color. You can put names on them. They'll ship them out. Everything will be fine. If you're making your reservation through Disney and you're customizing your Magic Bands through My Disney Experience, chances are everything will go fine. There are some unusual scenarios, though, and questions that people have. So let's go through that.
Okay.
All right. Cool. So the first question: what colors do they come in? Can anyone name all the colors? There's seven.
Oh, man. Gray.
Gray.
Gray. Wait, I was gonna say
red.
Gray.
Red. Green. Orange.
Yellow.
Blue.
Mm-hmm.
Green.
You said green twice. There's
yellow.
Not, there's only,
yellow.
Yellow. One more.
You got the pink one in?
Oh, score, pink.
Yeah, yes. Pink was next. Yep, I'm looking at a pink highlighter right now.
Fantastic. All right, good. Do offsite guests need magic bands?
Need? No, but they can get ones, yes.
Yes.
That's a trick question.
So the ticket that you get is RFID enabled. You can use that for fast passes and everything else, getting into the park and whatnot. You don't need it, but if you want them, what do?
You pay for them.
Where?
I've seen them.
Buy them.
Yeah, in the stores.
Yeah.
They're sold throughout the parks. That's right. And they cost anyone?
$12.
$12 to $30, depending on the one you get. We'll talk more about those.
Oh, yeah. Run Disney was selling them for like $25.
We'll talk about those when we get there. So, good. So, good. All right. So now the first question. First tricky question. Can different people in the same room link their magic bands to different credit cards?
So you're saying if we have two people in one room, can one go to one credit card and
yes.
one go?
Mike and Lynn share a hotel room, but they want their magic band charges to go to different credit cards. Is it possible?
You would have to have different My Disney Experience accounts, right? Like if you and I, Lynn,
right
share.
Right answer, wrong reason.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can do it. I'm told by someone who works at the front desk that you do it at the front desk. So you can't. It can't be done on My Disney Experience. What will happen is the front desk will set up a separate profile for the person who doesn't want to use the credit card that's on reservation, and everything will go from there. Can you link your magic band to a debit card?
To a debit card, yes.
Yes. Yes. Very good. Can you link your magic band to a gift card?
No.
No. Very good. Why not?
Because the thing is that. I don't know. I'm
you
guessing.
Can't file against it, right?
Well, I mean, it's because you can have only one card attached to a magic band at any one time.
No. So the reason is that if you think about how a gift card is used, you present a gift card at the time of payment, but the credit card is used in advance of payment for a magic band. It's sort of a guarantee. So what the suggestion that I got from Scabetta. Was if you really want to use a gift card to pay for your stuff, go down the night before you're scheduled to check out before midnight, and you've given a credit card to check in. Instead, pay your balance with your gift card, so you'll have a zero balance at midnight when your folio cuts, and then they do the settlement at midnight, and then you'll pay for it. So
it's folio or folio?
Folio, F-O-L-I-O.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Can I link my room to one credit card? And my magic band to another credit card.
Say that again.
Can I link my room to one credit card and my magic band to another credit card?
Yes, if you don't link your magic band to your room, right?
No, because you have to link your magic band to a room. So the answer is no.
Oh.
The magic band has to be linked to a room to be linked to a credit card. So in that case, there's only one. So the credit card is linked to the room, not to the band. All right. If you're making multiple trips per year, do you get new bands for each trip?
Yes.
Yes.
Is there
any way to stop getting them?
I don't know if there is right now. The only thing I know is that you can graciously refuse and say, please put it back into a recycling. But I don't know if you can refuse.
You should ask Newell since he's probably tried it.
Newell?
They will hold them at the desk if you tell them you don't want them. They will.
Yeah. So if you're interested in recycling, what you do is don't customize the second, the subsequent ones that you don't want. And then just decline them when you're offered the gray ones at the front desk. If you've got more than 8 magic bands active at any time, this is another tip, it takes longer to check in. So what happens apparently is the system starts scanning for magic bands nearby when you're checking in. And if you've got more than 8, it takes a really long time for the system to scan through all of the active magic bands. So if you've got more than 8, before you leave home, deactivate on My Disney Experience any of the ones you're not using. Don't customize another set because that won't get the mail to your house. Just deactivate whatever you're not using. All right, here's another question. If you're staying at two resorts during the same trip, will you get two sets of bands?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. And can you refuse the second set? Yes, of course. Now, here's an interesting tip from Skibetta. When you, let's say you're staying at, you know, Pop Century, Coronado Springs, Wilderness Lodge, make sure that you claim all three reservations on My Disney Experience before you check in, not just the first one. Because the system won't know, even though you're, you know, Mike Scopa on all three reservations, the system won't know that you've checked in at the first resort, that it means you're in Orlando for the second and third ones. You actually have to claim the reservations for the second and third one. Otherwise, your Magic Bands won't automatically be linked. So definitely do that.
Makes sense.
Do kids age 0 to 3 need a band?
No.
No, that's right. They don't need a ticket, so they don't need a band. But here's the interesting thing. This is a tip from Skibetta, which I really like. You should get one anyway and put it on the child's belt loop, teething ring, whatever. This way, if you and the child get separated, cast members can scan the band, help find your family.
That's a great tip.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. That really
is. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. So can kids ages 0 to 3 go on a Fastpass Plus rides without a Fastpass? Yeah. They can because they don't need a ticket. Here's the other interesting thing, though. Kids under age 14 must be accompanied by a ride and an adult. That's the official policy. It might not be followed all the time. Like your 12-year-old will probably be able to go on Barnstormer without you being on it. But what Disney is trying to prevent is you from shuttling your 4-year-old into line with Anna and Elsa for an hour because you don't want to spend your own Fastpass along with Anna and Elsa. So don't do that.
And bad parenting in general.
Bad parenting in general, exactly. That harkens back to the kid getting lost thing attached to the kid. All right. Suppose you're getting magic bands for your next trip, but you've got a 2-year-old, or Matt, you've got a 1-year-old or a 0-year-old, who doesn't need hers. Can you give the child's magic band to your mother since if she's staying off-site? And if so, will she be able to make Fastpass reservations 60 days in advance?
I'm going to say no.
Scopa?
No.
No?
Just for the heck of it, I'm going to say yes.
The answer is no. You can't link them. You can disassociate the magic band from your daughter and give it to your mom, but the mom's band won't be linked to your Ramirez credit card.
By the way, I guess no purely because it sounded too good to be true and Disney never let something like that happen.
Exactly.
That's the only rationale behind it.
Do annual pass holders need a magic band?
No.
No, they don't. But you do get one free.
Right.
Annual pass holders, Florida residents, and other pass holders get one free magic band.
Yeah, when I got my annual pass in September, we bought it at the spot so they didn't give us a magic band. It was going to be mailed to us.
Yeah.
And actually, that's not true. We bought them online and we showed up and redeemed it. Anyway, we used the RFID cards, that trip.
Oh, really? You didn't just go purchase one just to have
it? No, we didn't purchase one and we weren't staying on property. So.
Oh, right.
I wasn't going to spend money for something that was going to come in the mail.
Okay. Good. What kind of special or limited edition bands are available, and do they do anything that regular bands don't?
Cost more.
Yeah, they cost more. So they cost up to $30 each.
And some make noise, and some make chimes or music when you scan them.
Yeah, so the most common ones are the princess ones. There's Tinkerbell ones, so they've got most of the princesses. Run Disney, Scopa mentioned, has some.
Newell has the Haunted Mansion one.
Yes, I do.
Haunted Mansion. Does the Haunted Mansion do anything when you go to a touch point?
Not a thing.
Ugh.
Yeah, but I think the Star Wars one did, I thought.
Yeah, so Star Wars one, they had a Yoda one that turned the Mickey symbol green, and it says something. Also, there's a Darth Vader one that will turn the Mickey head symbol
red. You are.
Breathing. Yeah, exactly. They've got one with Toy Story characters. Actually, Disney Cruise Line gives them out for the kids' clubs. They don't actually work in the park, but it's the same sort of technology, but... they're all yellow, which is kind of cool. Bright, bright, bright yellow. Can you customize your magic bands?
In what way?
Make them your own.
Like decorations?
Yes, you can.
Yeah, so Disney sells cover bands in a variety of patterns, prints, and designs. If you go into Pinterest and you type in decorate magic bands, you'll get everything from nail polish to little jewels that get stuck on. One of the things I did this week, on Monday, I did a blog article on this online place called MagicYourBands.com, where they'll do custom vinyl stickers. And so you can upload anything you want, your own face, your kid's face, designs that you want. They've got their own too for like holidays and whatnot. But you can make your own. So I did actually some touringplans.com ones, which are pretty cool.
Do you do logo ones?
Sorry, you can do logos? Yeah, you can do logos.
Okay, cool.
So you could do like a Mouse World Radio one if you wanted to.
I think I'll try that.
Yeah, it was, and they're like, you know, $6 to $8 and they come with five of them. The funny thing is like, so, this is a little aside. I wanted to see how well they would work in Florida. So I actually wore it during a reunion. But the month before that, I had them. I got them around Halloween, a little bit before Halloween. I actually kept one, on my magic band in my shower for a month. So, well, think about it. You gotta yeah. simulate Florida humidity, right? And so I kept it, and dude, I'm telling you, the sticker did not budge an inch. I would never want to get that glue actually on my hands because I don't know what would happen. But I wore it around reunion. It was fine. A couple of people asked about it. I gave it, actually travel agents loved it too. I thought it was a pretty cool, branding idea. Anyway, so here's a trivia question for you. What's the biggest and smallest wrist sizes that magic bands will fit?
In what, inches or whatever?
Inches, yeah.
You mean a circumference, Len?
Yeah, circumference, yeah.
Okay.
Or you could give it to me in radius, and I can just multiply by, you know, by pi.
I'm gonna double
it and multiply by pi.
I'm gonna say 7 inches for a wrist, and I'm gonna a large wrist, and I'm gonna say small wrist 3 inches.
It's actually not bad. You're in the ballpark. So the smallest wrist, which is it's tiny, 4.5 inches around. Which put that in perspective, that's like maybe 2.5 of my adult fingers. That's it. I don't know that you could actually fit it on an infant without pinching the infant's wrist. It's that small. And it'll go all the way up to 9 inches, which is pretty big. I've heard of people who actually link two of them together if they need a little bit more than 9 inches. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can link two of them together, of course, and only one of them needs to work. Cool. When do you start needing your magic bands?
The very first time you, magic bands, the very first time you enter your room, because you need to, make sure they work. So if you are, the number of people that are in the room, they all have to activate them by one at a time going in, the door closes, the second one goes in, opens up with the magic band, and so on and so forth.
Really? I never had to do that.
Yeah, I've not had to do that either. But, Scopa, think back. Before you get to your room, where are you?
Airport.
Very good, Matt. Go ahead.
Checking in.
Or Magical Express.
Oh.
Yeah, so it helps with Magical Express.
Oh, Magical Express.
So if you've got magic bands and you're taking Magical Express, either put them on before you get on the plane or put them in a carry-on bag, not in your checked luggage. Because if you're using Magical Express, your magic bands will go to your room without you and you won't be able to get into your room and then it's a hassle. So keep them with you.
That's a great tip too.
Thank you. How long do magic bands last? Last question. How long do magic bands last?
Forever?
I broke one actually the other day. I have it on my desk and I keep on playing with it on board.
How did you break it? Really?
You know the little thingy, I don't know what the term is, the little thingy that goes in the hole to make it, to give it its size?
Yeah. The pin.
I just set myself for like 8 different, that's what she said, jokes. Yeah. that thing broke off.
Oh. How does that break off?
When you play with it long enough, that's what happens. That's what she said.
I know. Your parents were right. All right. So they should last about 2 years. The thing that makes them go bad, assuming you're not playing with it constantly, is the battery.
Bad influences?
Yeah, bad influences. So supposedly, an upcoming version of My Disney Experience will show you how much battery you should have left on your device. We'll see what happens on that. But yeah, around 2 years, which means that mine is actually coming up. I got another year with mine. I think the end of this year would be my magic band. I'll have to get another one.
Cool.
Interesting. Anyway, those are our questions. Let us, if you guys have another scenario, if our listeners have other scenarios that we haven't covered, please put them on the show notes or tweet them to us. We'll try and get to them.
Very good. Good stuff, Len. Thank you very much. And, you know, we've got some time for some listener emails we're going to read here. So let's read some questions. First one is from Will Saxon of Houston, Texas. I subscribe to a Yahoo group for DVC members where people sometimes post their trip reports. I was reading one this morning while having breakfast. In it, the person described her recent experience riding the Jingle Jungle Cruise. There was a big group on the boat, and we all noticed they had finger puppets for some reason. They were all ages, too. After every damn pun or joke the skipper did, these people all waved their finger puppets or tapped them on the ears and did a loud, exaggerated laugh. It sounded like a bad laugh track from a 70s sitcom. It was so bizarre and humorous at first, but it never stopped for the entire ride. It ended up becoming just plain annoying, and at times you couldn't hear the skipper because of this loud, fake laughter as they were seated about 4 people away from the skipper. didn't think any of us minded when we got back to the dock. My husband said something about it. 15 minutes of his life he could never get back. Yeah. LOL.
it's true. I actually wrote to the person because Mike, it's one of your old Ollier's friends.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
That wrote it, and so the tone of the letter doesn't actually reflect how upset she was. She was absolutely fine with it. She thought it was funny. But I apologized, you know, and said, you know, we tried to get as many people as we could on the cruise, you know, without having to get other day guests on. But she laughed about it after she heard the story.
Cool. Will continues in his email. I was just about to spit out my Cocoa Pebbles when I read this. I'm not podcast profiling, but my first thought was this had to be a WWE reunion sighting.
I totally was.
I totally remember Len mentioning finger puppets in a recent episode.
Yep.
Mongello seems to be too highbrow for finger puppets, so I doubt it was him.
Yes. Yeah, Lou's too highbrow for finger puppets, yes.
But we're not.
Yes. That's exactly what I think every night before I go to bed. If only Mongello would do finger puppets. If only Mongello would do finger puppets.
Yeah. Hope you guys are having a blast. Hope to make it a reunion one of these years. P.S. I'll see if I can find the address of the person who wrote the trip report so you can refund her the 15 minutes of her life that you zapped. I'm sure that will be a pleasant surprise. Go Steelers.
Already talked to her. That's awesome.
That's great.
And by the way, for the record, that was my boat.
Was it really?
Yeah, I was the finger puppet boat.
It's Matt's fault.
Next, we have an email from Jay Feely. In episode 1428, you listed the Comedy Warehouse shows as an overlooked holiday treat. Has it actually been confirmed that there will be a show for the holiday season? I've been looking, but I haven't seen an announcement, and I know that Frozen is at the Premiere Theater. If anyone's heard, it would be you.
This was a late December question, but yeah, they came back.
Yep.
I think that's good. I mean, it looks to be fairly permanent. Number one, I mean, with all the construction that's going to happen at the studios.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to need some. Matt, by the way, speaking of a construction of the studios, have you heard anything about Indiana Jones going away?
No more so than the usual, you know, like, oh, when, you know, Star Wars Land comes, they're going to take out all that stuff. Cause obviously it's a huge footprint and it's right near Star Wars, but I haven't heard anything that I would care to actually repeat.
Huh, okay.
Says what I just said.
I heard heard something from a former cast member, like a recently former cast member on it.
Oh. Well, it's right across from Gertie, so it's the perfect spot.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. I don't know how they would keep it there with the rest of that area being Star Wars Land, but we'll see. We'll know. You know, in 60 days we should know, depending on how much construction goes on.
And you're right. That's a huge footprint, that attraction.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Next, we have an email from Kent Spear. Hello, gentlemen, and I use that term loosely. Trying to help out a friend visiting the parks in July of 2015. They want to see princesses, 11 and 7-year-old girls, but get the most for their money. They have the dining plan, one table service, and I told them to go to Akershus for a late breakfast at, like, say, 10 a.m. to see all the princesses instead of Cinderella's Royal Table. It would mean getting a park hopper for one day. They only wanted to go to Magic Kingdom for their 2 days at Disney World, but they still would like to have table service for the next day instead of wasting two at Cinderella's Table. Also, if Anna and Elsa are not at the breakfast, they can go early and see them before they get to the breakfast. Am I right? Anna and Elsa are not in Magic Kingdom anymore? Would this be a good solution?
Oh, they're definitely in the Magic Kingdom. They're not moving over. I mean, they'll be at Epcot too when Maelstrom reopens next year. But you could pick up if you could pick up like a 9 a.m. fast pass for Anna and Elsa at the Magic Kingdom, do that and then leave and go to the Princess Breakfast at Acres just like at 10:30. I mean, that'd be cutting it close. Or, you know, you could do it the next day.
Right.
But those are the two things you could do. Yeah, I think that's good.
Yeah, I think it'd be harder for you to get that kind of pass because I think, you know, that particular time, because as you know, it's difficult enough just to get one in general, right? But I think his plan though that they should go to, see, it's kind of interesting. They're going to Akershus, so they have to get they have to get park hopping, which will have a fixed cost on them. But then on the flip side, the thing is that if they don't do that, then they're going to be paying extra for Cinderella's Royal Table. So it's kind of like, which would be more? I think park hopping. No, actually, it's not true, Len. I mean, because you figure, how much is for a family of let's say four four because they got two kids to go to Cinderella's Royal Table versus four people to get the park hopper? What is cheaper?
So Cinderella's Royal Table is what, $50-$60 a person?
Mm-hmm.
And how many days in the tickets?
Two.
Hold on one second, I'll tell you.
Because they are still going to have to pay for breakfast then at Akershus, so it might actually, Cinderella might actually be cheaper, even if they are going to be paying, depends where they eat their second meal.
Let's see.
So you're paying cash for it.
Yeah, it's a, well, it's $100 to get the, well, hold on. Oh man, that's tough, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's $200 more to do the park hopper. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Oh, man, that's tough.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, it's probably going to be, it's probably slightly cheaper to do the Cinderella thing, but they won't see Anna and Elsa except for the, oh, yeah, they could see Anna and Elsa for the Magic Kingdom and then do Cinderella's Royal Table. How long is Cinderella's Royal Table under refurbishment?
I don't remember actually, but I don't remember it being that long. I think just the month of January, right?
Through March, actually. When are they going?
No.
Through middle of March, March 6th. When are they going?
I don't know. I deleted the email.
Ah.
Oh, July.
Oh, yeah, so there's that. Yeah, so do Cinderella's Royal Table and NL, also, and that's the cheapest way to do it right there. It's cheaper that way. If you really wanted to do Acre Shows, which I think is a better meal, it'd be, you know, $20 or $30 more to do it, including the park hopper. You know, so in the overall scheme of things, it's not that much more money.
Next, we have an email from, oh, also don't forget about that extra money though, Len. They go to Acroshoots, they still have one more table service credit to use, whereas they go to Cinderella, they gotta pay out of pocket now for their second meal.
Oh, right, cause it's two versus one.
Yes.
Yeah, that's smart too. Oh, so it's probably is cheaper to go to Acroshoots then.
There you go.
There you go.
Next, we have an email from Roger, just following up on a question from episode 1433 about Uber and Lyft at Disney World. Mm-hmm. I only used Uber and it was the one time while attending Destination D in November. I was staying at Beach Club via DVC and wanted to get to Contemporary very quickly. It was my first time using Uber at all and was treated to a code that gave me $20 for the first ride. Total cost was under $11, so free for me. And the driver was great. He worked full-time at the Swan and Dolphin and drove for Uber to make extra money in the mornings.
Ooh, that's a great idea for cast members.
They'll probably make more money than they will as cast members.
Yeah, really. Yeah, because you, if you're just staying within Disney, I mean, there's nowhere on property that takes an hour to get to.
Nope.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
It's awesome.
You got to figure most people are not going any further than like Universal or something. No one's going to be like, I need to go to Sanford.
Yeah, right.
Next email from Brianna from Providence, Rhode Island. First off, thanks for making my long days even better with your love for Disney. I'm glad I'm not the only one who thinks about Disney at almost all times of the day. I've been listening for a while now and have listened to a vast majority of the podcasts. Finally, I've come up with the question. It's hard to find information about a land and sea vacation. My family and I took a 3-night Disney cruise and did 4 nights in Disney World. That was 14 years ago in 2000, and I'm sure some things have changed. I'd like to plan this trip for my parents' 25th wedding anniversary, my fiancé's birthday, and my younger sister's graduation. In total, there'd be 8 people, my family and his family. I'm pretty experienced with the world, but I've only been on one cruise. We'd like to take a week in the world and do a 7-day cruise. So questions are, 1.
Wow.
How can we get the most of both vacations without completely breaking the bank? Don't go on a Disney cruise.
You would schedule it for like off season.
Yeah, like now or September.
Yeah, or December. For
December
reunion is super cheap. Yeah, I would actually ask a travel agent, because they'll be able to tell you when the lowest combinations of things are. But yeah, like first couple of weeks of December, pretty much anytime school is in session, it's relatively inexpensive.
Yep.
I would recommend if you're doing 7 nights, I like the Eastern Caribbean on the Fantasy. It's my favorite itinerary. You get a lot of sea days to enjoy the ship. The ports are more interesting than, let's say, Nassau. That's my idea.
Okay. Next, how do we link the two trips, or do we have to reserve them as two separate vacations?
Get a travel agent; they can do it, and they'll actually handle your baggage going back and forth. I would do the cruise after your stay.
Yeah, to relax, just right?
Yeah, to relax a little bit more. Yeah,
yeah. I think Newell, you tend to agree with that, right? When we did the land versus sea, and then vice versa.
It depends. I prefer that, but it would depend.
Yeah, it depends on the person, but yeah. I generally agree that it's
some people it's want best the relaxation after the land, but I prefer it before.
Do you really?
I do. I don't know why. It's just like when you get off the cruise, you're like, okay, we got another adventure ahead of us instead of that, you know, that depressed ride back on a DCL bus.
Okay, so more things to look forward to.
I think so.
Yeah, interesting.
Do you have any tips for cruising on Disney without kids? My younger sister is 17, and she's the youngest person going.
So the 17-year-old won't – I mean, she could do some things in the spa. They've got their kids' spas. They won't be able to go to Apollo or Remy or anything like that, but that's okay. You need some adult time. I mean, at 17, they can take care of themselves. They are going to be sort of at the top end of the kids' clubs, which is fine, again. But they're old enough that you can leave them alone to, like, you know, go do some activities or go see a show by themselves or whatever. And obviously it's a safe environment. I would definitely check out the bars while you're there. If you've got a 17-year-old, you don't have any small children to worry about. I think the bars on the, especially the Dream and the Fantasy, the bars are really, really good. Some of the best bars I've ever seen. Definitely take advantage of that. There are some, wine tastings or, you know, beverage, spirits tastings, tequila, scotch, whiskey, stuff like that, cognac. Those are all a lot of fun. And they're scheduled throughout the day, you know, starting like at noon and going to like 5 p.m. Those are a lot of fun too. Now, obviously kids can't go, but again, you can let them run around the ship, go to the pool or whatever, and everything will be fine.
Also, when we're talking about Disney cruises, there's two resources I always recommend. First is the unofficial guide to Disney Cruise Line, which just has brand new edition come out a couple months ago, right, Len?
Yep, December, actually.
No, in fact, 1 month ago. So you can check that out. It's on Amazon and a bunch of other places. And the other one is DisneyCruiseLineBlog.com. So good resources if you're interested in researching information about a cruise. And, of course, also, Len, you have a lot of good articles on the Touring Plans blog. As well.
That's right. We keep them up to date. We have a variety of like walking tours and port excursions. We actually got a fare forecast or two that'll tell you for any upcoming cruise what the pricing trend was day by day for similar cruises in the past.
Nice.
Yeah.
Next, we have an email from Scott from Wilston, Vermont. Thanks for all you do. Love the show. My wife and I have traveled to Disney World during the off season, but I'm not sure if an off season really exists anymore. So my question is, if you were going to go to Disney World for 7 days, what three different 7 day weeks would you pick between October and December? And which three 7 day weeks would you pick if different for any other time of the year based solely on lowest crowd levels?
October to December?
October to December at 3 7 day weeks.
You're cutting it. You're really closing it. At that point,
first week in October, first week in December, and first week in November.
So that I was going to say first 2 weeks in December.
I was going to say second week in December too.
Yeah, either one.
Yeah,
week before Christmas maybe. That might be. That
basically might be any one. Week, any week in December before you get to like the 20th, essentially. Yeah.
But I would stay away from Columbus Day. That's a 3 day holiday in the States. So,
yeah, and then you got like that Jersey Week thing in October that also, or that's in November actually. I take that back.
And then Thanksgiving. Yeah,
I would actually say the second full week of November is actually a little bit busier, a little less busy than the first. But yeah, I mean October is just beautiful. The first week is good. The last week, except for Halloween, good. And then the first couple weeks of December, yeah.
Next, we have an email from. Somebody didn't put their name. Don't forget, put your name and where you're from. So this is from Mike Newell's cousin.
Hey.
I've been listening to your podcast for several years. I mostly binge listen during long road trips, so it seems sometimes weeks or more between episodes for me. My family, Florida residents, have been visiting Disney World since it opened. In fact, my first visit was during the Magic Kingdom while it was under construction.
Wow.
I recall the tour included a model of the theme park under a glass case. I wonder where that is. Anyway, over these many years, I never bothered to educate myself on DVC. While we always stay at one of the resorts, we've never wanted to feel tied down to anything. I'm just now starting to learn about the world of Disney Vacation Club point renting. Have you guys ever done a podcast about this? I would love to hear insight on how this works. Is it worth it? And what are the benefits and drawbacks? Is it considered a good deal? And are you better off with Florida resident rates or other discounts? What are other pitfalls? Perhaps others may be interested as well. Keep up the good work. So we have actually, and Len's a big fan of renting points, right, Len?
Huge, yeah. So I like dvcrentals.com. Go by the way, the thing that was under glass was probably in One Man's Dream.
Yeah,
I'm a huge fan of renting points. It's vastly cheaper than owning them, I think.
Yeah, probably you can get a great deal on it. In fact, especially considering that you get to get the benefits of the DVC pricing, so to speak, in terms of how much a point costs per night, mm-hmm. and you don't have to put up all the money for it.
Yeah.
I think there's probably two chief drawbacks. Number one, technically speaking, I mean, your money is going, like, there's some dude, and it's some middleman involved, and it's just some other guy. It's not another, I mean, they have companies that help facilitate this.
He's a broker.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's doing the matching, and matching takes takes time and money. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that. And number two, obviously, if you do this for 10 years, let's say, you do this every year, 10 years, you're like, yeah, this is great. After 10 years, you got nothing to show for it. It's like leasing, right? Whereas if you had bought into DVC over 10 years, you'd have something to show for it.
And something to sell.
What's that?
And something to sell.
Exactly, yeah. So I guess the longer you use it, potentially the less you have to show for it if that bothers you. I mean, it wouldn't, I don't think it would necessarily bother me, but it is a drawback to some extent. I mean, Glenn, do you think it's always a better deal or sometimes a better deal for certain groups, certain kind of accommodations?
You know, I think for almost any size group, it's better than, you know, comparable rooms that you could get for almost any number of people. Obviously, if you're right on the cusp, like five people, you know, in a studio, instead of getting two rooms, it may not be cheaper than getting two rooms, but, I think the overall amenities are so much better at DVC. You know, I think a one bedroom is sort of like my default favorite accommodation.
It is.
In Walt Disney World.
I agree with that.
You can stay up late, you can go to bed early, and there's not somebody else in the room with you who wants to watch TV or, you know, eat potato chips or play drums or whatever.
You know? You know how many times that saved me? I mean, because I like to stay up late and Mary does not, so she'll go to bed and I'll stay in the living room and the bigger TV's in there. It's so much more nicer.
Yeah. You know, or, you know, if you got younger kids, you can kick the kids out and make them go watch television and you can go to bed yourself or the, you know, the exact opposite, whatever. So plus you can get up in the morning, make coffee like me. I get up in the morning, I make coffee, you know, and I sit down and start doing email like at 6 a.m.
You can sit at the little coffee table there instead of sitting on your bed with the laptop.
Exactly. And yeah, and you know, and I can turn all the lights on. I can turn on Mass World Radio. This is sort of my morning habit to do all of these things. And you know, and Laurel can still sleep in the bedroom, you know?
Right. Yeah. Plus you get the full size bath in the bedroom, so you get the whirlpool.
Yeah. You get king size bed, you get a full size bathroom. There's not, you know, there's room for everybody's stuff. I really do like a one bedroom. I'm talking myself into a trip.
Take me with you.
I'll be right back. The other thing is, I don't think we've done a specific, I thought we had done one, but I can't find one, a specific episode we've done. We've talked about it quite a bit in our wiki at wiki.wdwtoday.com, which I'm sure Philip will link to in our show notes. There's a section on Disney Vacation Club in general, and there's a lot of references to it there, and you can probably find, some helpful information in other episodes that we've talked about. So hopefully that will, actually there's a whole section on renting points, and there's every episode with time markers. Wow, look at this stuff.
Cool.
So we'll put a link in there for it. Next, we have an email from TJ from Wheaton, Illinois.
Yo, TJ.
During our recent trip, my wife and I got into a conversation about the various hats that people wear at Disney World. There seems to be a great deal of hats people buy and wear in the parks that wouldn't ever want to be seen wearing outside of the parks. I, for one, have never seen anyone wearing mouse ears, a baseball hat with goofy ears, or a giant sorcerer Mickey hat. Any idea how much money they make off park hats? Keep up the great work.
Tons and tons and tons.
Yes. In general, most Disney World merchandise, I would feel ashamed to wear outside. I remember one time I bought a Goofy sweatshirt and I wore it in Connecticut, like walking around, because I just felt like it's like in Disney World, no one bats an eye. It's like, yeah, it makes perfect sense. And outside, it's just like people look at you like, you know, are you okay? Do you need some money? Are you?
Yeah,
like, is everything okay?
Yeah, yeah. You were one of the classic retro style older shirts, and people are like, "You got that at Goodwill, didn't you?" Like 5 years ago. You're laundering that shirt in a river, in a van down by the river. Yeah,
by the river.
It depends on what it is. Like, I wouldn't wear Goofy ears or Mickey ears to the supermarket, but I mean, I wouldn't mind wearing a Goofy sweatshirt.
Len, to his credit, Len did wear that sweatshirt he paid $60 for everywhere.
Well, he got his use out of it.
I wore the hell out of that sweatshirt.
They had to peel it off.
I'd be surprised if that is in Hannah's birth photos. With hood up.
Inheritance.
Exactly.
I leave you this old chair, these family heirlooms, and a sweater from Disney World that once cost me $60.
Man.
Scope, have you ever seen anybody wearing outside of Disney World, outside of Florida, the like a Mickey hat or a Goofy hat or something like that?
That is over the age of four.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Unless it's Halloween or something odd, you know.
Yeah. No, I've never.
Yeah, they're just like the Disney balloons. You buy them and they throw them away immediately.
Yeah.
But they, they're not expensive, but they're not cheap either.
Well, I mean, if you bought something like that, you can always pack it up and bring it next time. You don't have to.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do that. I know a lot of people who they have special Disney shirts and they only wear them when they're down in Florida. Yeah. I know there was one guy I saw, he had a shirt that I remember seeing back in the 80s and 90s. And I said, wow, that's kept up pretty well. And he says, I wear it only when I go to Walt Disney World. And how often do you go to Walt Disney World? Every 2 to 3 years. So, yeah.
You wore it like 10 times.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, time for our last question of the day, and that means I give Mr. Newell 3 emails to choose from, and one gets read today. The other 2 go back in the email queue to be answered later. Ready, Mike?
Let's do it.
Your options are getting along without the stampede. Was I just discriminated against?
Uh-oh.
What is the world, really?
Wow.
Well.
My God.
To answer the second one, you've been temporarily inconvenienced.
Yeah, let's do with the what is the world, really?
What is the world?
Last email of the day is from Dimitri. Hello, boys. My sister joined my wife, our kids, and me in the world this past October. My sister and I have been going to Disney World every year since we were little kids. We both have strong emotional connections with certain rides, areas, etc. I casually mentioned when we were in line for Peter Pan's flight that it was time for the ride to go, and my sister freaked out. What the hell was wrong with you?
Exactly.
And you've upset me, but this would absolutely kill Mom, may have been uttered. After the yelling and gnashing of teeth subsided, it sparked an interesting debate. What exactly is Walt Disney World? My sister and I took two opposite sides. To her, it's specific rides, animatronics, and attractions that instantly take her back to being in a certain time and place in her life. To me, the world is an emotional response. It's not the Haunted Mansion. It's the way I react to the Haunted Mansion. Can I get lost in this? Do I forget that I have a wife, 2 kids, and a mortgage when I'm in the show building? Frankly, there are a number of aged Disney World attractions that don't give me that feeling anymore. And I wish Imagineering would look at things like Peter Pan's Flight and the Great Movie Ride and the Jungle Cruise and say, these are legendary pieces of our park, but can we do better? Has their time passed, and is there something else we can do in this space that gives it a new generation the same kind of thrills a fake volcano, tiny Indians, and a black light paint gave their parents? So what do you think? What is Walt Disney World to you? I don't want a general waxing poetic. I want to know specifically what Disney World is to Matt and to Mike and to the other Mike and to Len.
Yeah, this is the is it a museum question, right?
Yes. That's
the,
yeah. I mean, I tend to agree with Dimitri than the Dimitri sister in this case. I think it's nice for when it is, but their times come for it to change, and you know they can do better, and that's why they should improve certain things. And it's not a museum. I take that it's not a museum, and I think there are some sacred cows that if you mess with them, you know you're going to there are consequences certainly, but. You know what? People complain and cry about everything, and then you know what happens? People when as soon as the new thing actually comes around, they're like, "Oh, yeah, this is pretty good."
Well,
and the evidence was New Fantasyland because people were crying and screaming, "How dare you touch Fantasyland? And how dare you change where Dumbo is and do all this stuff?" And now everyone loves it, and it's amazing, and it's the best thing since sliced bread.
Same thing goes for the Sorcerer's Hat. The amount of screaming on Twitter this week about the hat. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I never liked it. I was okay to stick it. You know, I think it can all change, and they'd be fine. I think there are certain touchstone attractions that will last longer than others. I can't imagine the Haunted Mansion ever going away.
Right.
I can definitely see, you know, and I've said this before on the show, the Jungle Cruise is past its prime, and if it didn't exist in Disney World, I'd be fine with it. You know, if it didn't exist in any Disney park anywhere, you know, I might be sad about it, but I would, you know, assuming they put something else in there and didn't just close it down, I think they continually need to reinvent themselves.
What do you think, Scopa?
Well, you know, I think this is one of those topics where we could do an hour show on. I think that, and I've often noticed that Walt Disney World is now approaching, the point at which Disneyland arrived at about 20 years ago, 25 years ago, and that is that there's a sense of ownership by everybody who goes down there. And so when anything changes, it's like you're changing something in my world. You're changing something in my playground. I think that you're right, Matt. I think that there are some sacred cows that are within the four parks, even the Animal Kingdom. I think that there are certain things that should never be touched. I also agree with Len that there are certain things that need to be either touched or removed. But I think that as the years go on and as that resort becomes older and older, there's going to be more screaming and yelling as things, are changed. As far as the hat goes, I think there are more people screaming about the hat going up than the hat going down. But like what Mike said, there's a lot of screaming, and that's because the hat becomes something that a lot of people are used to, especially the younger generation who know the studios park as having that hat since day one. For those of us who were there from the beginning with the studios, no, that wasn't there from day one. So we have a little bit more, we can handle change a little bit better, but it'll be interesting. I think that if you're going to describe Walt Disney World, it's a live movie that attempts to, help us suspend our disbelief and try to get us to forget our troubles. But I think that, it's getting to the point now where they have to be very careful about what they change, because I think there's going to be a lot of screaming and yelling, and in some cases, yes, it will be accepted after the fact, but in other cases, like Stitch, it won't.
Do you guys think that, would you agree that a large part of why Walt Disney World, even Disneyland, enjoys the success that it does is based on adult nostalgia, that I had a good time as a child, thus I want to bring my children there?
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah,
so by the same token, wouldn't you then say that when people, if that's the theory and that's what generates a lot of business for them, that if they came back and there wasn't no Jungle Cruise or Haunted Mansion or Peter Pan's Flight, that would irk a lot of people? It's like, what do you mean that's not there? Like, you know, would that generate a negative then reaction by the consumer to the point, you know, people would then start questioning coming back?
I think so. I think that there are several untouchables in every theme park, and you don't touch them. I think that they are those areas that trigger memories from way back when. And, you know, you go back there and you want to see the Haunted Mansion. You want to remember how you want to look at the graveyard. I think that there are certain attractions that are like that, and you just don't touch them.
I think social media has a lot to do with it too, because now you can look at a picture of the hat every single day and the process of it taking down. Whereas, you know, if you didn't go for a year, Horizons was gone. And I think there's more outcry on social media than there was even 10 years ago.
Very good. Well, I think that'll wrap things up for this episode. Also want a couple quick programming notes. Number one, our next live show of WDW Today is actually going to be this Sunday.
It is?
January 25th, 8
p.m.
Eastern
Holy
time.
Oh, cow, that was fast.
Yeah, man, time flies. 2016, here we come.
Woo!
So join us for that, 8 p.m. More details at WDWToday.com. The live shows are a lot of fun. I got to tell you, whether you've been to them before or you've never been, it's a great experience, and it's like listener question shows, but you're involved directly, as opposed to 3 months ago. So it's a lot of fun. We'd really like it if you could join us for that. And the other thing is, of course, if you want to have your listener questions being sent in, regardless if you're going to join us for a live show this Sunday or not, you can email us questions@wdwtoday.com. Also, don't forget that our sponsor, MEI and Mousefan Travel, of course, you heard earlier about someone was saying, asked this question about, you know, they want to plan a Disney World trip. They also want to plan a Disney cruise. What to do? What did Len say? If I can quote one Len Testa, he should use it. That person should use a travel agent. And that was more of a paraphrase than a quote. I apologize, Len. I don't want to set up myself for slander or anything. But the thing is, MEI and Mousefan Travel is a great travel agency. In fact, to be able to plan a Walt Disney World or a Disney Cruise Line or Disneyland or Disneyland Paris, anywhere Disney goes, vacation, because they're experts really in it. They're not just people that just, you know, push buttons for you and, oh yeah, I can book that for you, and I can also book your trip to, you know, White Castle. No, they can, I don't know any travel agents that can book White Castle vacations, for the record. Anyway, they're people that have been to these places many, 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 many times. They are trained in everything about these destinations, and frankly, they're experts, and they're here to help you, whether you're a first timer or you've been there many, many times and you just want to have someone make your life a little bit easier. MEI and Mouse Fan Travel is here to help you. Check them out right now at mousefantravel.com. And if you're also planning a trip to Walt Disney World, again, our good friends at All Star Vacation Homes might be a great place for you to stay, because they've got some amazing homes, I got to tell you, in near Walt Disney World. Just so many great homes with so many great amenities and for not a lot of price. You really got to check it out right now at allstarvacationhomes.com. And lastly, you heard a lot of questions actually this week about crowds. When should I go? When should I not go? What's the best day to go here? You know what? Touringplans.com, it's the way to get around those long lines and crowds everywhere, because you heard someone else say, it wasn't even one of us, one of our listeners says, there is no more off-season. And you know what? It's a sad reality. It's an unfortunate truth. Is that what it says? Unfortunate truth? Inconvenient Truth. And and touringplans.com is here to help you, not with the environment, but with getting around those long lines at Disney World. They are a great resource, and we have a special discount code just for our podcast listeners. That's right. Check them out right now. Use discount code ZUZU2015, ZUZU2015, and you will save a bundle on a touringplans.com subscription. For Len Testa, Mike Scopa, and Mike Newell, I'm Matt Hotchberg. We'll see you on the next show.
Stupid Judy, stupid energy.
This has been a production of Mouse World Radio.